age by changing a life your own, to change the way you relate to all the circumstances of living, how you relate to government, how you relate to religion, science, how you relate to the professions, and how thoughtful and conscientiously you escape the tendencies to bigotry which arise in nearly every person. We've got to gradually grow the way we should. Now, if we do that between now and the end of the century, I think we'll be on our way to the greatest change the world has ever known. And it is being forced on us by the fact that our skills are becoming auto-destructive. We are thinking our way into a dilemma which we cannot escape from unless we change our own thinking. We are heading into a way of life that is intolerable unless we change it. We are heading into a period of change which is going to result either in the building of a better civilization than we've ever known, or will bring down the present in ruin. We have to get together and do some solid, simple, honest thinking. It's tough, it's not popular, but it's survival. Now, most people care for someone in this world. They care for their children, their parents, their marital partner. They want to have a happier situation. This means they've got to cause it. They've got to begin to change the dispositional peculiarities of themselves and become more integrated and better people. I've had a great many come to me during these many years with their problems. Some of them just only wanted sympathy. Well, that's not very valuable, but if you can pat them on the head and call it that. But it's not going to change anything. A few wanted to change themselves. One man came to me and said he was on the verge of losing his home, very largely because of his own conduct. What could he do about it? I told him what I thought he could do about it and save the home. And in desperation, he tried it and saved the home. And the home that he expected to lose in a few months has now gone on for over 20 years. It's to do things, to get at things. Sometimes you use strange medicines for these cases. In those periods when there was a lot of peace and not much war, and those periods are getting scarce now, a young man came to me who was a definite drifter. He had no leadership. His parents, he didn't even know where they were. He wasn't trained in anything. He was gradually becoming an alcoholic, and he was gradually going down to join that group of people who might haunt the East End of some town, such as San Francisco, streets there where there's awful troubles. But in any event, we talked to him, and I said to him, there's one thing you can do, you're not going to like it, but you can do it. Join the Marines. He did. He stayed for one reenlistment. And at the end of 5 years, he came back. And I saw him come in the door. I saw a man. I saw a person with real integrities, with a profession, with a straight mind, off of all alcohol. He was disciplined into being a human being. And of course, I picked a time when there wasn't any war, so he wasn't worried much about that. But he had to obey orders. He had to do things on time. He had to clean up his own room. He had to have a certain pride in achievement and accomplishment. And he got it out of the Marine Corps. A lot of young people could get it out of the homes if the parents would give them some discipline. But no, it's too much trouble. The parents don't want to even have an argument with their own children. The result is that no discipline is resulting in the inability of the person to learn. He doesn't want to take the time. And if somebody does do it and does take the time, he is labeled a highbrow and regarded with disfavor. Anyone that tries hard is going to be criticized for trying. But if that's the best cause of criticism, I know, is the criticism for doing it better. So if we have another 10 years, maybe, a little more, we can put this world back on its feet. We are gradually increasing the influences for better conditions. Little by little, real government leaders are beginning to become involved in this realization. Most of the governments of the world today are in trouble, and they know it. And they have a pretty good idea why they're in trouble. Of course, some of them are in trouble and in a very poor condition at the moment to get out of it. But every one of these troubled peoples knows that something has to change. There has to be an entirely new way of life in which the ends of living are not material conquest or material wealth, but the fulfillment of the personal potential of the human being. We've got to build a world that is ruled in effect by affections and friendship, by mutual trust and cooperation for survival and for general improvement. We know now that all this nationalism is simply a pretense to perpetuate someone's selfishness or arrogance. We know that all these systems are for profit of some kind and not for principle. And people themselves are finding out. And everywhere there are disturbances. Now, unfortunately, the first disturbances are violence. And this is very, very wrong, because that will solve nothing either. It is not to be violent and not to attack your enemy that will get you somewhere or hold hostages. The thing that helps the person to be free from the slavery which he has imposed upon himself is the development of his own potential, development of his own principles, so that he can stand and say that he is a person, and that he cannot be enslaved except by his own permission. And if he has to go through various stages of subordination because of politics around him, this does not interfere at any time with the right to be himself. He may not be able to advertise it. He doesn't have to. All he has to do is practice it. And very few people are in trouble politically because they practice principles, unless the principles are wrong. They can be quietly practiced by anyone. Three or four religions can live under one roof. Each one practices their own without conflict with the others. All the conflicts that we have are largely based upon superstitions, upon misinformations, or we have accepted the conduct of people as the indication of their religion. And if their conduct is impossible, we consider their faith intolerable. All these things can be changed. And we can set up new educational methods by which a great deal of this problem can be corrected. We do not need to bring theology into the public schools, but we do need to have a basic integrity and an idealism that is generally accepted. We do not need to favor one group above another, but we have a right to tell the person that as education is costly and is paid for by the government or by whatever service does it, that the student is responsible for growing and learning. And if he does not find growth and learning in the existing educational system, then he can search it for it elsewhere. He does not have to go along to be cut out as a paper doll in some system. We need to have more intelligence and more thinking. And we also need to have willingness to arbitrate differences. Now, we have a number of different groups that are trying to do these things. Each of these groups is very largely centered around a personality. This is not good. The group's progress should be centered around the supreme reality of truth. There are no real leaders in this world. There are only some who are a step ahead, that's all. Everyone is in servitude to the realities of the universe. We all must obey the same rules, whether we are so-called exalted or so-called inferior. There is no one who is able to administer the universe except the universe itself. And somewhere out there, there is a power. A power that has always been. A power that seemingly never makes a mistake. A power that can do just as much with the eye of a flea as it does with the completion of the solar system. a power that deals in the miniature and the massive, a power that sets planets in orbit and takes care of the smallest blade of grass. There is a great rule, and that rule is infinitely benevolent. That rule is a rule of enlightened love. It is a rule of something that will forever be parental, forever guarding and preserving and helping. And those who want to have the best life are the ones who want to live according to that rule and help it. And wherever something interferes with the proper function of the rights of human beings or the rights of other creatures, then something must be done about it. And the only thing we can do is make sure that we're not making any of those mistakes. Now, we're gradually going to see the new major movements are going to come up. Some of them international, some of them largely sufficient to regain our respect. We may not want to join all of these things because it doesn't do any good particularly. But we are going to be with that which is right. And we're going to stand strong and firm for the realities that transcend prejudice of all kinds. We're not going to be dominated by prejudice, by unwillingness to accept a belief because it comes from the wrong source. There is only one source for right belief, and that is the divine power. There's only one source for bad advice, and that's humanity. And we have to correct this as rapidly as we possibly can. So I think we all should make not a 5-year plan in this case, but a 10-year plan. A 10-year plan in which we declare that at the end of 10 years, we're going to be better people than we are now. Really better people. We're going to be able to say at the end of 10 years, I'm jealous of no one. And I may be able to say at the end of 10 years, I believe all religions have the right to exist, and I really believe it. It's not merely a platitude. And I'd be perfectly willing to worship in any man's altar. Because all in the last run lead to the same great immutable principle. All religions are efforts to find the nature of truth and the nature of the beauty that we all admire. We're not going to have any more family feuds because family is part of the divine plan. We are in families because it is necessary. It is part of the ordination. And if we cannot maintain a family, we cannot maintain a world. If all our families have to end in divorce, it means that all our idealism is going down to defeat. We're going to make things work. And we're going to do it not by forcing our will upon others, but by sharing with others in the natural service of those things which are honorable and right. We are going to gradually also enlighten ourselves. We're not going to have time enough to waste on very, very insipid radio or television programs. We're going to be out trying to learn more. We want to become better informed. We want to understand the sources of our culture. We want to know what happens when people make mistakes. We want to know why we had an Inquisition and why we could have another one. We want to know also why we had religious wars from the beginning. We might have another one. But not if we think right. Not if we live right. Not if we take religion out of the book and put it in our hearts where it belongs. We may never call it anything, but if it makes us better people, it is true faith. So we know these things can be done, but they've got to be done by us. We cannot wait for great changes in society. Society is locked in its own mistakes. And as these mistakes spread, we're going to find more and more trouble. And we're going to realize the inhumanity of man to man. We're going to realize how people go out and kill each other. Murder men, women, and children for what? They don't even know what. It is just that they hate something. And when you hate, it simply means that love has failed. And all hate is death, and love is life. We have to gradually get over the belief that we can win a war. No one can win a war, and we don't need to. What we want to do is win the peace. And to do that, we've got to practice it ourselves. We are getting to the point where we can't afford a war. Our nuclear weaponry is past human credibility. Even those who have helped to build this nuclear artillery are suddenly realizing that they will be among the first victims. There's suddenly a realization that it is no longer possible for humanity to win a major war. All we can do is leave a desert planet floating in a dead orbit in space. We suddenly realize that if we have any desire to survive, we've got to grow. We've got to find ways of understanding each other rather than exterminating the people we don't like. We're going to have to find ways of understanding their language, understanding their dreams, understanding their ideals and their hopes and their visions. We've got to make something out of this that is going to really make a better world. If we do not, we are not going to have too many more chances. We're also going to realize that all this type of thing, that finally, the great oracle, the great Sibylline mystery, is in our own hearts. It is inside of ourselves that abides the sacred truths we all need to realize. We know in our souls what is right, but we will not let our souls speak. We are very careful to prevent it. We do everything we can to prevent the inner life from shining through to help to guide us. We have covered it with prejudice, we've covered it with selfishness, and we've covered it with ulterior motives. We are afraid to feel and think according to the divine plan. We are afraid to bestow our love for fear it'll be abused. Maybe it will be. But the great virtue lies in the loving and not in the being loved. We do not have to worry whether we are appreciated or not. We've got to stay with the truth. We've got to stay with principles that are bigger than people. And if we can't find the people, we've still got to live the principles. Now, one of the things that we hope for is that a series of conferences and commissions will show the general public in many countries the direction that has come out of a little mature thinking. We are going to realize that most of this mature thinking has originated in powerful military countries, that they have developed an armament or a system of aggressive militarism over a period of years. But suddenly, something is happening. Maybe it's because they're getting a little tired, or maybe it's because as they get older, their ideas of conquering the physical world lessen. But in any event, these powers are now begging for arbitration. They don't want to go on with this. And in their moment of conscience, perhaps a little something has come into their hearts or souls, that what they are doing is not only a sin against humanity, but a sin against space itself. We are also finding that we can't do this and we can't do that. The smog is closing in. The ozone layers of the atmosphere are thinning. Our natural resources are diminishing. And yet we are wasting them every day without any hope of replacing them. Nations that were very extravagant in the use of fuels for military purposes are beginning to realize that this little bottle which we call the planet can be empty someday. And then there will be no advantage in all this vast array of mechanical and military strength. So that for the first time, leading powers are afraid. They are sufficiently afraid to even speak to each other. They are frightened of the possibility that some strange and mysterious circumstance may set off an unwinnable situation, that we could, with almost in 24 hours, destroy the work of 10,000 years. And nobody really wants to be the one to do that. They would like to get rid of somebody, take what he has, and keep the thing going the way it is. They want to act as bandits or brigands, but they do not want to destroy the main chance. Now they discover that the little brigand and the big brigand are both the same, both equally dangerous. So we are beginning to talk in terms that indicate that now, if people will really get together and do some solid thinking, that they can influence nearly any form of government they wish to. They can influence the sciences. They can influence the arts. They can tell whether we spend money for our various paintings and sculpturings and architectural masterpieces. They can also tell us what we should pay for our medical bills. They can tell us all these things, and we will believe them, and we will ultimately meet them, because the individual will demand integrity in his public servants, also in his professions, also in his guarantees and in his advertising. We can demand these things. We can get the changes in the advertising any time we decide not to buy the product that is falsely advertised. We can censor all these things ourselves. And we have to. Conditions cannot be changed by the group. Conditions must be changed from within the individual himself. And he can do it. And we can all do it. And we can start with some small thing in which we can gain a certain pride for having done it a little better. We don't need to upset everything we know in 1 minute. But we can start gradually civilizing ourselves. We can start gradually demanding the values which we hear about but seldom see. We can simply boycott what we do not believe. We can simply demand improvements in various things, and the moment this demand is backed by a reduction in profits, the service will be reorganized. We have having the same problem with cigarette smoking. We're having it with everything. But there is a strong, increasing demand for health. That's going to go into the food processing. It's going to go into everything. And we can have what we want. And what we deserve is what we're going to get. So we'd better start deserving what we should have. Well, that's quite a sentence, old man. So, I don't know how I worked that one out, but I guess it's all right. But we can do these things. We have the right. The one thing they can't do, it is take away from us the right not to spend what we have. We do not have to pour it in just because they invite us to. And almost every field, from entertainment to education, can be altered very rapidly by the discrimination of the public, by the determination to have things better. And out of all this together will come perhaps something that we have a right to consider as worthwhile. In ancient times, the peoples of the old religions brought to the altars of their gods the first of the flock, the best of everything, the greatest of the treasures, the greatest of the thinkers, and the most devout of the worshippers. They brought their hearts and souls to the altars of their gods, and these offerings were acceptable unto the Most High. And these offerings were that the people gave themselves to their God. They didn't give themselves to be burned on an altar, but they gave themselves as a living instrument to be used by the divine purpose. They gave their hearts and their minds to the service of humanity, to the service of truth, and to the advancement of the divine plan in the mortal world. And this is the way it has to be. And this is the way it should be done, and this is the way we're all going to do it if we want it done. Otherwise, conditions will remain uncertain. There is also a possibility by simply studying the factors of some of these problems. I have a friend who travels very intensively. He's in the business of travel. And he has told me the conditions in most of the major cities of the world. That in practically every city of importance in the world, traffic is immovable. The tremendous amounts of travel nowadays in traffic, local traffic, is beyond estimation. Today we are burning more gasoline in a day than we used to burn in a year. But where is the supply? We think we got some left. We probably have. At the present rate, we might have left enough to last another 50 years. But then what? Oh, then we use electricity. Well, how are we going to make the electricity? How are we going to control the sun enough to take the place of all that we're wasting? It's ever changing and changing, but never changing ourselves. We're going to find new ways of travel, but we're not going to find any reason why we shouldn't spend half our time on wheels. We are not learning to conserve anything. We're going to wait till it runs out and try to find a substitute, and for a time we will. But this little bottle has no genie in it. It cannot replace itself after we have destroyed its contents. And we might as well begin to realize that we can extend the utility of this planet for a long time if we recognize that we are cast away on an island. We are like Robinson Crusoe. We are left on a desert island where we have to build a world of our own. This was the concept of the New Atlantis. This was the concept of the Christianopolis and all the utopian literature of the 17th century. We are brought to an island in space, and here we have to build a life. We have to find ways. We have to discover solutions. We have to learn to live with ourselves, which is one of the most difficult of all lessons to learn. But in the case of the Earth, we not only are on an island, but we are on an island that is beautifully verdant. We are on the island in which nature is enriched. We are surrounded by thousands of other living things that are also trying to grow and unfold. We have found an island and land in its natural condition of extraordinary beauty. We find that an all-provident nature protects all this, that it makes it possible for things to be beautiful. It has given us so much of natural beauty, and we have destroyed so much of this with our own selfish, arbitrary conduct. There's no reason why we can't enjoy life. There's no reason why we cannot share with nature the bounties and wonders of existence. There is no reason why we can't develop beautiful and useful talents from within ourselves. We can lift our abilities from the brain trust to perhaps a heart doctrine. We can find fulfillment in growing and contributing to beauty. We can train our children up to be kind to each other and to be kind to the stranger at the gate. We can do all kinds of things if we can get over this hypnosis that we have fallen into, this slough of ambition and greed and fun. We can do all kinds of things because we're not having any fun. No narcotic addict is having fun. He's having high and low and most of it torture. We're not having great success the way we're doing it. We just have a run on Wall Street, which doesn't help anybody very much, except certain persons who engineered it. But anyway, we have all these problems which we don't need. All we need is to settle down and grow. We can unfold the talents within ourselves. There is probably enough genius at this moment in the world to completely rebuild it. But we're never going to call for this genius. It's going to gradually die out, unknown, unhonored, and unsung. We are not calling out from the interior to other people to release all they can give and would be likely to give to a good cause. We are satisfied to take up a collection. This is not the basic problem. Surely there has to be a collection. But the real gift is the gift of self to progress. And the gift, in most cases, is the gift of the human mind to the divine soul behind that mind. We can give ourselves to the God in us. We can buy no higher redemption than to release the power of the soul within us. We can serve God in us, the hope of glory. We can become proud to be servants in the everlasting house. We can do all the beautiful things that we want to do, but we don't even know they're beautiful. To us, anything that doesn't result in higher interest rates isn't beautiful. So we have interest rates that gradually grind us to death. All these things result in the slavery. We are enslaved to a concept of life that is wrong. We are in servitude to a policy that failed 10,000 years ago and has failed 100 times since. We do not realize that we are in slavery to an attitude, to a policy, to a world acceptance of the worst. We remember that outside the wall of China, there was a battlefield 400 miles long. This was a war that came before the Christian era. We remember the gods that fought over the fields of Troy. We remember the Inquisition, the conquests of Napoleon, Caesar, and Alexander, the attempted conquests of Hitler and Mussolini. We know there was nothing but misery. There was nothing but sorrow, and people, under a mistaken concept of patriotism, went out and died for a dictator who had not in himself one moment of real understanding of human life. Let's stop doing this type of thing. Let's demand that our leaders try, at least, to help us to release the God in us until it becomes a powerful voice in the world. When the divine is released through man, his problems are solved. While he constantly tries to build institutions to take the place of his own character, he will be in trouble. And as long as he adulterates his dream with avarice and ambition and jealousies, he's in trouble. So what we are looking for, really, is to get behind this movement that is coming so that it won't fail this time. That for the first time, the whole world is thinking in terms of peace. One after another, the nations are going to come into this. But they're going to need the support of each of us. The leader who wants to bring peace must speak for a people that wants peace. The individual who wants to get rid of crime by removing its cause must be backed by the people so that this voice is not one crying in the wilderness waiting for martyrdom. All these things can be done, but we've got to be with those that are trying to do them. We've got to be with those who believe in principles and try to apply them. And the only way we can do that is to release these principles in ourselves. The human soul is aware of the facts. The human soul has gone through many embodiments. It is perfectly aware of our problem. But whenever it tries to speak, it is shushed by the mind or by the desires or by the opportunities and privileges of wrong attitudes. So, until the soul governs the mind cannot build a good world. If the soul in the world can be created anew, if we can bring the soul out of nations, we will have peace. If we cannot do this, we will have continued struggle to the end of time. What opportunities we'll have in the future, hard to say. But I have a sneaky suspicion that this is going to be one of the last great opportunities before there is a really tragic breakdown. We are still in a condition to take care of the matter. We are in a condition to make enough changes for the better that we can adjust to a future with considerable hope and aspiration. But if we refuse this opportunity, in which over 100 nations are working together to try to find a solution, if we don't put everything we have behind them and help them in every way possible, if we can't end forever our intolerances and our impatiences and our jealousies and our tyrannies and get behind the answer, then we're going to have a little really serious trouble. And it's much better to very simply and honestly walk forward into the next century than it is to push, cram, and juggle figures and factors and personalities in a desperate effort to get there. So we highly recommend that this is the time for peace. It is possible in our time. It's only possible, however, if we do it. And if we do not do it, no legislation in the world can do it. We can't legislate the control of the drug industry. We can't negotiate or legislate the problem of AIDS. These things we cannot meet with legislation. Integrity cannot be nominated and elected. Integrity is in the human soul itself and will come out if we give it a chance. But without our own integrity, no nations can be honorable or proper citizens of this world. So we hope that on the simple fact that we can do it probably now better than in the last 500 years. Foundations laid 400 years ago can come out now. The mysteries and secret things that have been hidden for the ages can be brought into the surface and help us. But we've got to make the change ourselves. We've got to honestly labor for a better world. And we must be the first to make the sacrifices that are necessary for world peace and harmony and the security for our children and their children. The time of selfishness is gone. This is the time when, for the first moment, I guess, in 500 years, we have really realized that the world is in trouble and that this trouble is due to ourselves. And if we can solve this problem, giving values where they belong, giving help when it is necessary, we can probably, most of us, live to see a better world than we have ever known. But we've got to do it. We've got to do it ourselves through sacrifice, dedication, and a resolution not to cooperate in any way with that which is dishonorable. Because most dishonor depends on the selfishness of little people to maintain its major projects. If people are honest, the world will be honest. And if the little people unite to demand the proper standard of values, they'll get it. And they'll finally realize that the reason God made so many little people is because they were necessary to take care of a few big ones who didn't have enough understanding and insight to protect themselves. Out of all of this comes also reforms in arts, sciences, business, economics. We will probably finally come back to the old socialistic idea of production for use and not for profit. All these things will be modified, but there'll be a part in it somewhere. We will be back to the thinking of the great Greek scholars and others of that period, that the only answer to the suffering of mankind is to find out what causes suffering. And the cause of suffering is abuse of something. Abuse of self, abuse of others, or abuse of natural resources. When we correct this thing, do that which is right and proper, we'll have a pretty good world to live in. And I'd like to hope that we'll all be able to gather someday and welcome in an age of fraternity, an age of brotherhood, in which there will be no longer any strangers in this world, but only friends. Thank you.